it please the court? This is a state's appeal from a motion to quash, which Honorable George Gallagher, who is here, I'm so sorry to hear that. Well, actually, the real court is here, Lisa, quashed the state's enhancement allegations. This case reminds me of several things, but I want to just quickly point out standard of review on a motion to quash. It's de novo. This is a legal issue. Judge Gallagher completely obliged us in entering all sorts of findings of fact. So really, although you are basically under an avalanche of paperwork from each side submitting all of the statutory authority from the Iowa State priors and copies of those, really you just need to look at Judge Gallagher's findings of fact. And we don't contest, and he didn't contest, that the Iowa prior, that it was the subject of the motion to quash, was something that this defendant faced penitentiary time for. So that's the salient part of the finding. So although we have mounds of paper on both sides, really that is perhaps the most important thing. In addition to the statutory provisions that we're going to be talking about in a moment and the case law applying that. Now, you know, sometimes in life I look at things and I see language in documents, letters, Bible, whatever, and different people look at that same text and come away with incredibly different interpretations. And those sometimes are based on their faith, maybe their experiential knowledge, some sort of personal bias. But when it comes to statutory law, we certainly, Mr. Ray and I certainly have completely divergent opinions about how these provisions apply, but we're given a guideline. And so those other types of things and other issues where you might have either reasonable minds differing don't apply. And here, I guess for the second time in the afternoon, you're dealing with a case of statutory construction. And yes, Justice Walker, as you were just citing the Code Construction Act, we heavily rely on that in this case. Okay. Also, one of the things that I look at when I look at this case is how is someone, a good attorney like Mr. Ray, the state, how do we go into a case like this and come away with the opposite of what we expected? Did someone get derailed? And a friend of mine always says when we're kind of in a confused state, back that truck up. And she's a chemist, and she means start pulling off the components of it. And that same sort of chemical analysis applies to legal analysis. We look at elements and we look at words and statutes. You know, I planned a really long kind of argument today that talked about my argument in the brief, which of course you all can read, and Mr. Ray's argument, but I looked at the statutes again and again over the weekend and in preparation, and I realized that we were missing a few sort of prologue type words when we were thinking about the provisions. And those words are at the beginning of the provision in 1241, which is the classification statute for dealing with felony priors, and then also in the beginning of section 107, which is one of the most basic sections of the penal code. And that provision at the very beginning of 107 says, in this code. It kind of hit me like a prologue of John moment. It wasn't in the beginning, but it was in this code. And the definitions in 107 apply in the Texas Penal Code. So, taking those three little words there, and then under this subchapter, those words in 1241, after backing that truck up and looking at those provisions and how they apply, made me kind of understand where this truck got derailed. And when you look at my argument, which Mr. Ray disagrees with my argument, too. After I was preparing last week, I kept laughing. There isn't anything we agree on. He reads my brief, and I think it's at page maybe 16 of his, and he says, oh, the state believes that it's either 1241.1 or 1241.2. But I think if you turn to my table of contents, you'll see that I say 1241.1 equals felony, and 1241.2 equals felony. And so I believe both provisions of 1241 show that this prior Iowa aggravated misdemeanor should be considered a felony. But backing up to that provision in 107 tells you that that definition of felony applies, and this and the defense has gotten derailed because when you read 107, they're looking at the labeling language. And 107, subsection 23, is the section that defines felony. And it says, an offense so designated by law or punishable by death or confinement in the penitentiary. So there's a disjunctive, designated by law, or punishable by death or confinement in the penitentiary. Okay, we're obviously not dealing with a death case. So somebody's facing penitentiary time, or again, designated by law. But I realized where the defense had gone wrong. Law is also a definition under 107. Sometimes those little basic things that you have to back up and find those components are what undermine or build different arguments. Law under 107A30 means the Constitution or a statute of this state or of the United States. And then it lists also a written opinion, other things. It does not list other state laws. So, sorry, this is statutory construction. It's not very lively. But so when you look at 107's definition of felony, then when it says means an offense so designated by law, you can insert in Texas or in the federal government, but not from another state. The label from the other state has nothing to do with the application of felony in the Texas Penal Code, in this code, as the very first words of 107 say. So you just back that up and plug in felony into 1241.2, because that's another place that it's used, and that's what we're doing is we're classifying prior convictions for enhancement purposes. And when you read 1241.2, which that's the subsection that says Class B misdemeanor, which is what the defense believes this applies. They say this Iowa aggravated misdemeanor under Texas law is a Class B misdemeanor under 1241 sub 2. But just think, and my mind works in Venn diagrams, 1241 sub 2, it's not a felony, and confinement in jail is affixed as a possible punishment. Okay.
But it is under the Iowa law.
It's if you put in felony and
no,
you...
if you read it the way it's written and you read the Iowa law, the aggravated misdemeanors or the offenses of which he was convicted in Iowa were by statute punishable as possible... subject to punishment.
Absolutely. You are correct about that.
In a jail.
But not the first part. And 1241 sub 2 is written in the conjunctive. That's an and between the two. So it's not an either or like the felony definition under 107. It's in the conjunctive. So it says is not a felony. Now you don't read that as not a felony because Iowa called it a misdemeanor. You put the definition that the penal code 107 says, in this code, this word means, and you insert that definition in 1241.2.
But I think that seems to be the issue, not the answer. Is it referring to a felony under Texas law or under Iowa law?
Well, since the Texas Penal Code's definitions say that in this code, the very first three words say, in this code, these definitions apply. You have to apply 107A23 and insert that language, as I did in my brief in one place, in that sentence.
Part of their argument is that this offense would have been a misdemeanor in Texas at the time that it was committed as well.
That's correct, and they cite Bloom for that proposition. And we cite Bloom for the opposite proposition. And again, it's kind of one of those things where I look at how do we... This one I can't explain, except for to look at and say, page 26 of the defense brief, they say, thus Bloom, Supra, and its predecessors required that out-of-state convictions also be a felony in Texas. Bloom doesn't, unless you're counting Judge Marvin Teague's, bless his heart, loved him dearly, unless you're counting his one vote dissent as the opinion in Ex parte Bloom, that's an incorrect reading. In fact, quoted, I think there's three pages of Bloom in the defense brief, but the Bloom test, which is basically the third paragraph from the end of the decision says, thus the federal offense for which the petitioner was convicted carried confinement in the penitentiary as a possible punishment. And what Bloom does, it says we overrule these other cases that after the new penal code applied the incorrect law. I call that rule the mirror law. If the other state's crime mirrored our crime under the pre-penal code provisions before January 1st of 1974, that was the law. And there's still apparently a lot of people who think that's still the law, even though that changed in 74. That's not the law. That's not what Bloom says. Bloom overruled Montgomery in the other case, and as Judge Clinton says later in Childress, it sub silentio overruled Garcia and Arnold, which were those mirror case law holdings. So it's clear when you go, if you don't know what Bloom stands for, go to Judge Teague's dissent. And in his dissent, he is bemoaning that the state or that the court has ditched the mirror law. Bloom says you follow 1241. And that means that you look to see if they faced penitentiary time, exactly what was applied there.
But he didn't face penitentiary time.
He did face the possibility of penitentiary time.
It seems to me that under the Iowa law, because the judge sentenced him to less than 1 year, he was not confined in the penitentiary and it was not possible for him to be confined to the penitentiary, and that the Iowa law is different from Texas in that regard.
Well, that differs from what Judge Gallagher found, and his finding, I do believe, is supported by the record. And in findings of fact C and D, he found that the Iowa crimes were aggravated misdemeanors. Under Iowa law, the maximum statutory punishment for an aggravated misdemeanor includes possible confinement in the Iowa penitentiary. This defendant did not get sentenced to penitentiary time. He got what I'll call a wimpy 45 days on both of the two enhancement provisions, but he certainly faced it. The fact that the Iowa prosecutors didn't pony up on that is not something that controls here in Texas. He faced it, and that's the same thing that was discussed in Bloom. In each of those cases, the DiPolito case, which the defense, again, disagrees with, but it shows that a New York prosecutor used a prior misdemeanor in California under the laws of their state. They didn't use facing penitentiary time, but applied there. Under each of these, you apply the law of the state who is prosecuting at the time. Iowa law does not control what we do here in Texas now for this prosecution. We're glad they prosecuted him. We want to use those prosecutions. He clearly, under the findings of fact, which are absolutely supported by the record, and which, when they're support, well, this is de novo, but those findings of fact are correct, and they show that he faced penitentiary time. So he didn't get it sentenced, but that's common. I also go through punishable in my brief, and that is 311.011. Punishable means that you are facing punishment. And so that's why this is deemed a felony, even though Iowa called it aggravated misdemeanor.
And also gave the option of punishing it by jail confinement.
That's correct. But if you'll apply the definition of felony in 1241 sub 2, then it shows that provision does not apply either. Both 1241.1 and 1241.2 show that this was a prior felony for enhancement purposes now.
Wasn't that Iowa range of punishment most analogous to, for example, failure to stop and render aid in the state of Texas, which has hybrid possibility of county jail time, possibility of prison, but yet that's a felony, considered a felony under Texas law?
Well, and if you look at the actual statute in the transportation code, it sets out that this is a felony. And so if you remember the law provision that I read earlier, and then also the effective code provision that the defense refers to in their brief, it's 103, the effects of the code, and they look at the middle section B, that it applies to other laws that Title 1, 2, and 3 of the Penal Code apply to other laws, but you still use law. It's that little definition of law in 107A30, which does not include laws from the other states. So, yes, failure to stop and render aid, though, has designations in it, labels in it, that apply under our Texas Penal Code.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn. Mr. Bryan?
The problem with the state's entire argument here is it doesn't work. And what I mean by that is, if you go, and I'm going to start out on this DiPolito case that she pointed out from New York. DiPolito, if you read through the whole case, you'll find that it was a guy in California that had a burglary case, and the burglary case at sentencing could be reduced to a misdemeanor, somewhat kind of like a 1244, but it was a felony. That statute, and I quoted it in my brief, I believe it's section 70.06 of the New York law, talks about you can use out-of-state conduct or out-of-state convictions, but it's the similarity test. In other words, would that conduct be a felony in New York? The answer to that is yes. Burglary, the way that offense was alleged to have been committed in California, that's a felony in New York. There are lots of provisions in our penal code, specifically in the DWI laws, the old prior laws under 6701, L1, L2, those laws, as well as laws of another state that are substantially similar. Those are all usable as a conviction for enhancement purposes. The sexual offenses are like that. The assault on family member cases or offenses are like that. 1241 of the penal code doesn't talk about that. 1241 of the Penal Code gives you three little definitions of how you're going to use this. And I know there's a legion of cases that all talk about out-of-state convictions. I'm not sure I believe that the out-of-state convictions at all were part of what the legislature was talking about when they drafted that particular section. Because, I mean, I think it's a little far-fetched to think we're going to worry about how Iowa or Mississippi or California designates an offense. If you look at the cases or the statutes that I cited, and when I got to looking at this, I found dozens of them that talk about different ranges of punishment that are all convoluted. I never even heard of sedition that carries up to 20 years in the penitentiary, and it's buried in some code I'm not sure I could find in my office that talks about different ranges of punishment. I believe, and I think it stands to reason, that the statute 1241, you got to read it two different ways. And I put in my brief, and I was looking at this just a few minutes ago, when I said this on page 15, when I said the state's only looking at one portion, that being the first part of the definition of felony and misdemeanor, they're actually looking at the second part. Because, Justice Gardner, when you were talking a minute ago about how the possibility of punishment, I think it's arguable that the defendant or Mr. Richardson had a possibility of punishment, depending on what his sentence would be. Because in Iowa, actually what happens is if you get, and I don't think we included this in any of our briefing, but if the sentence is over 1 year, you go to the state penitentiary, it's a prison crowding issue and the jail crowding issue is why that's done. But the fact of the matter is the Iowa legislature says it's going to be a misdemeanor. And the prosecutor, Ms. Dahoney, says that's just completely wrong. Texas needs to look at it the way Texas wants to look at it. And if we had a statute that said the conduct is going to be a felony, if it was a felony in this state, then I think she's right. There's a little bit of a caveat of a problem because at the time of Mr. Richardson's conviction in 1994, not only was that conduct not a felony in Iowa, it wasn't a felony here. It's a felony in both places now. It's actually May of 1994 and in Iowa. And September 1st of 1994, when we kind of had an overhaul of our penal code, that offense became a felony. It was never a felony here, and it was never a felony there. So even if it was the same conduct argument, that isn't going to work either.
Well, doesn't Bloom make that a non-issue, though?
Well, I can understand, sort of, but I don't think that – I disagree with the way that y'all were talking about the Bloom case. What I think Bloom and all of these cases hold is if you've got an out-of-state felony – and it's a misdemeanor in Texas, then you can use it. And there's a lot of cases that are on that. There's not a single reported case that I've been able to find, and I've just looked. I probably spent more time on this case than any other, but it seems like it just doesn't make sense for a misdemeanor to be used to enhance a felony when that's not what our law allows, and it never has allowed that.
Well, but it says if it's designated or if it's punishable. Punishable, not punished by. Because, I mean, it seems your argument is, number one, it was designated as a misdemeanor, and number two, it was punished as a misdemeanor.
Then it ought to be a misdemeanor under that.
But that's not how Texas defines it. It says designation or punishable. It was punishable.
Texas says it's going to, under 1241, it says it's a felony if it's so designated by law or if it's punishable by the penitentiary. But if you look at the misdemeanor definition, it's exactly the same way. It says, so designated by law or punishable by being in jail. Well, we have a statute that's designated by law to be a misdemeanor. And my question is, why isn't that a misdemeanor? Why shouldn't it be? It's going to lead to this result. Let me give you a couple examples of this. Number one, in New York, every offense, felony or misdemeanor, you're punishable as if you go to the state penitentiary. That's why all the guys on Law and Order go to Rikers Island, because they're going to the pen even if it's for a misdemeanor. Under the state's theory, every single offense that you can commit in the state of New York is going to be a third-degree felony here. I mentioned the one about the garage sale. That's essentially a Class C misdemeanor in New York, but it's going to be a third-degree felony here. What if Mr. Richardson, if he wasn't in jail right now, if he went over here to the local gun store and attempted to buy a gun, assuming that he wasn't charged with two felonies. But if he just came to Texas and bought a gun, is he prohibited from purchasing a firearm because the state says he's been convicted of a felony? Can he vote?
I don't know.
Here's an even better one, Justice Gabriel. You've been a district judge for a long time. Every defendant that says he's never been convicted of a felony is eligible for probation in the cases that the jury can probate him. Is Judge Gallagher supposed to let Stuart Richardson sign an application for probation because the district attorney says, well, he's got this misdemeanor case. It was a misdemeanor in Iowa. Okay, but we're going to say that because he's in Texas, that's now a felony, he's not eligible for probation. So your range of punishment is going to be as little as 2 years probation. He's charged with aggravated assault. If he's enhanced under their theory, it's either 2 years probation all the way up to 99 years or life. How can you rationalize that? I don't think you can. And I don't think the statute was meant to do that. I'm not the only one that says this. District and County Attorneys Association publishes a book. Y'all probably got some of them back here, the great big book that tells the statutes, and it's got all the rules in it. And if you look at their annotation under 1241, it says exactly what I'm telling you. You go to the characterization of the offense, and that controls. That statute's been repealed, but the logic's still there. In my brief, there's a case where the Department of Public Safety tried to suspend somebody's handgun permit because the guy got arrested for a Class A misdemeanor. That statute, you got to come at it kind of from the other way, but because he'd been arrested for a Class A misdemeanor, he faced jail time, and it was designated as a misdemeanor. That's what he'd been convicted of. That individual happened to only have been convicted of a Class C, and so he was arguing they shouldn't suspend his license in the DPS-1. That's a very similar statute to Section 1241 of the Penal Code. It's the only statute, or the only time, that I've been able to find anything close to it. All the cases that you find are always, it's a felony conviction, and we're trying to use that because it's not a felony in Texas. That's generally where the argument comes up, as opposed to to being a misdemeanor conviction. There's another some authority that I found the other day, Kincaid versus McCulloch, Texas Penal Code, annotated 2011. I want to read you what it says. If the offense carries jail time as a punishment and is not specifically designated as a felony, then it's a Class B misdemeanor.
Can you repeat that case again?
Yes, I can. Kincaid and McCulloch, Texas Penal Code annotated, page 122, 2011 version. If the offense carries jail time as a punishment, it's not specifically designated as a felony. That's the problem. If it's not designated as a felony, then it's got to be a misdemeanor. And I would concede and I would suggest to you that Section 1241 of the Penal Code could have been written a little better. What it should have said, and I didn't find any kind of legislative history on this, what it should have said is if it's a felony or you can go to the penitentiary, you know, that's what's going to control in felony cases. There's two parts of that statute that only apply to misdemeanors, one being fine only. We don't have, I've never seen a case that has a fine only that's a felony, but you have lots of statutes that are misdemeanors facing jail time. So my position is this, and I think it's more logical when you get down to the practicalities of how this case is going to have to be tried. What we've got here is an individual who at the time he committed that offense was sentenced to a misdemeanor, committed a misdemeanor. That exact conduct was a misdemeanor in this state. And now what the state wants to do is take that conduct, which if he'd done exactly the same thing in Texas, okay, and at the time, our DWI statute had a maximum of 2 years. It was in the county jail. But based on that one twist, which is not because of a severity of punishment issue, it's a jail overcrowding issue, another state's going to say, let's send him to the penitentiary if his sentence is over a year, which he didn't get, then we're going to make that a felony. And we're going to treat everybody from Iowa different than everybody else in the United States. I don't have anything else unless y'all have some questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. Rebuttal?
I think it's easy to get sidetracked on the difference between classification and definition. 1241 talks about how you classify offenses from other jurisdictions, foreign offenses. The definitions, Mr. Ray wants to go between the definitions of felony and misdemeanor in 107. That's not the test. You use those definitions in 1241, but 1241 is what controls. And again, you know, I want to go to the concealed handgun law because there's another case that we see differently, and that's that DPS Rodriguez case that he cited. And in looking at the concealed handgun statute, it's broader as far as what offenses are considered a felony. It's subsection B of that provision, and of course it has the for the purposes of this section language, those little early prologue words again. But interestingly enough, in that statute, each time they talk about how a prior law is designated, in that statute they say, under A, it's designated by the law of this state as a felony. And in subsection B, contains the elements of an offense designated by the law of this state as a felony. You know what they're doing? They're applying the same language that applies in 107's definitions of felony and misdemeanor, because their law is defined as the law of this state. So since they don't have 107, because the government code doesn't use 107 penal code definitions in it, they use the same type of provisions. So the only time our codes apply designations of other laws is when it's Texas designations, penal code and government code under the concealed handgun statute. But you know what? This prior would be considered a felony under the concealed handgun provision because subsection B says it's, and this is all three parts are in the disjunctive, it says if it's punishable by confinement for 1 year or more in the penitentiary, again punishable in the penitentiary. So, again, it would be considered a felony under the concealed handgun provision.
How do you respond to Mr. Ray's argument that to give 1241, 1 and 2, the construction that you're urging would result in absurd consequences of people who've been convicted of misdemeanors and served sentences in misdemeanors being subjected to enhancement for felonies and possibly not being able to vote or get a concealed handgun license or other actions that are precluded by felonies but not misdemeanors?
Again, the definitions in 107 that we're applying apply in the Texas Penal Code. So they don't apply in the Hoffman case that he cites that actually refers to DiPolito is a juror disqualification issue. Those definitions don't apply there. Other definitions apply. In concealed handgun statute, that statute's language applies. I heard his argument on the 4212 Section 4 affidavit that defendants file. And you know what? This may be a case where the defendant with a prior felony is probation eligible. That's not the issue before the court at this point. But that may be the case, because when you read the Code of Criminal Procedure 3707, the 107 definitions don't apply. And 3707 has felony in there, and I couldn't find another definition. And so I'm not conceding, but I'm thinking it's possible this defendant could sign an affidavit being eligible for probation. I haven't completely researched that one, frankly, because that's not our issue. But that's a possibility. But that doesn't undermine the fact that Section 1241(1) shows this is a felony for enhancement purposes. So all those other arguments are just rabbit trails. This is a statutory construction case. Our definitions for our code in this code apply, and the labeling, the designation laws, only apply to laws in Texas. Same as the concealed handgun
license.
We are
allowed to consider the consequences of a particular construction under the Code of Construction Act, Section 311. And so I'm not sure that those are rabbit trails. I think that they are consequences of a particular construction.
I hear you on that, and I understand that, and I think it's important to read each provision's word language, and sometimes they're interpreted separately. There's different purpose for a concealed handgun provision having a broader application of what is a felony than another provision, for instance, being a disqualified juror. There's comity and full faith and credit provisions that were talked about in Hoffman that don't apply in this situation, because Texas, as a sovereign state, gets to decide its penal offenses. And so that's the state's position. We pray for this case to be returned to the trial court so that we can seek first-degree status for this offender. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Honey. Thank you, Mr. Ray. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing very much. And you are excused.